Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la región de Murcia. Pruebas específicas de certificación. Comprensión de textos orales. Nivel B1. Convocatoria, junio 2020.
Task 1.
Paul Leonard Newman was born in Cleveland, Ohio, in 1925. His father, Arthur Newman, ran a successful sporting goods store. His mother, Teresa Newman, loved the theater. She influenced her son Paul to act in school plays. During World War II, Newman served as an airplane radio operator. He later studied at Kenyon College in Ohio. There, he played football and continued performing in plays.
Arthur Newman did not think that acting was a sensible kind of job, but he agreed to support his son for a year while Paul performed with small theater companies. In 1950, Paul Newman returned to Cleveland with his new wife, Jacqueline, to manage the family store after his father's death. But the couple soon left Cleveland so that Paul Newman could study theater at Yale University in Connecticut.
A few years later, Paul Newman received a role in the Broadway play Picnic. The play ran for 14 months. It was while working on this play that he met the actress Joanne Woodward. During this period, Paul Newman also found roles on television shows. He studied at the Actors Studio in New York with actors who would also become famous, including James Dean and Marlon Brando.
Paul Newman's first movie, The Silver Chalice, came out in 1954. He later said that it was the worst movie ever made. Critics agreed. But his 1956 movie, Somebody Up There Likes Me, was a success that brought him increased public attention. Newman made many movies during the late 1950s. These include The Rack, The Left-Handed Gun, and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, which starred Elizabeth Taylor.
Paul Newman married Joanne Woodward in 1958, after divorcing his first wife the year before. They made 10 movies together. The first was The Long Hot Summer. The movie is based on stories by the American writer William Faulkner. Paul Leonard Newman was born in Cleveland, Ohio, in 1925. His father, Arthur Newman, ran a successful sporting goods store. His mother, Teresa Newman, loved the theater. She influenced her son Paul to act in school plays. During World War II, Newman served as an airplane radio operator. He later studied at Kenyon College in Ohio. There, he played football and continued performing in plays.
Arthur Newman did not think that acting was a sensible kind of job, but he agreed to support his son for a year while Paul performed with small theater companies. In 1950, Paul Newman returned to Cleveland with his new wife, Jacqueline, to manage the family store after his father's death. But the couple soon left Cleveland so that Paul Newman could study theater at Yale University in Connecticut.
A few years later, Paul Newman received a role in the Broadway play Picnic. The play ran for 14 months. It was while working on this play that he met the actress Joanne Woodward. During this period, Paul Newman also found roles on television shows. He studied at the Actors Studio in New York with actors who would also become famous, including James Dean and Marlon Brando.
Paul Newman's first movie, The Silver Chalice, came out in 1954. He later said that it was the worst movie ever made. Critics agreed. But his 1956 movie, Somebody Up There Likes Me, was a success that brought him increased public attention. Newman made many movies during the late 1950s. These include The Rack, The Left-Handed Gun, and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, which starred Elizabeth Taylor.
Paul Newman married Joanne Woodward in 1958, after divorcing his first wife the year before. They made 10 movies together. The first was The Long Hot Summer. The movie is based on stories by the American writer William Faulkner.
Task 2.
Costa Rica is over 5,000 miles southwest of the UK, across the Atlantic Ocean in Central America. It is smaller in size than Scotland, but much warmer. It's located between the Caribbean and the Pacific Ocean. Despite Costa Rica's small size, it is very biodiverse. This means it has many different kinds of animals and plants. In fact, there are more types of plants and animals here than in the whole of Europe. The warm weather in Costa Rica is exactly why this is such a good place to grow bananas. As a tropical fruit, bananas need to grow here in the tropics. All of the countries you can see here are tropical and are located on the equator. Here it's hot all year round. From December to April it's the dry season, and from May to November it's the rainy season. It has three main types of area: beautiful beaches, green lush rainforests, and volcanoes. Inland are the rainforests, like the Braulio Carrillo National Park. The rainforests are a protected place. They are special because the trees and plants clean the air we breathe. There are many animals that live here in the rainforest, including reptiles, mammals, and hundreds of different types of exotic birds. Along with the lush green areas, it has some of the most active volcanoes in the world. This one is called Poás. There are 6 active volcanoes here in Costa Rica, and another 61 that lie dormant. But it's not just plants and animals that live here in Costa Rica. It has a population of 4.7 million, and 1.1 million of those are children just like you. Children who live here in Costa Rica can expect to spend at least 14 years in school, learning about many of the same things as you. After leaving school, lots of people work in agriculture, as it's one of the main sources of income. And here in Costa Rica, one fruit that provides many jobs for the local community is bananas. Each year, Costa Rica grows up to 2 million tons of bananas. That's 10 billion bananas a year. Costa Rica is over 5,000 miles southwest of the UK, across the Atlantic Ocean in Central America. It is smaller in size than Scotland, but much warmer. It's located between the Caribbean and the Pacific Ocean. Despite Costa Rica's small size, it is very biodiverse. This means it has many different kinds of animals and plants. In fact, there are more types of plants and animals here than in the whole of Europe. The warm weather in Costa Rica is exactly why this is such a good place to grow bananas. As a tropical fruit, bananas need to grow here in the tropics. All of the countries you can see here are tropical and are located on the equator. Here it's hot all year round. From December to April it's the dry season, and from May to November it's the rainy season. It has three main types of area: beautiful beaches, green lush rainforests, and volcanoes. Inland are the rainforests, like the Braulio Carrillo National Park. The rainforests are a protected place. They are special because the trees and plants clean the air we breathe. There are many animals that live here in the rainforest, including reptiles, mammals, and hundreds of different types of exotic birds. Along with the lush green areas, it has some of the most active volcanoes in the world. This one is called Poás. There are 6 active volcanoes here in Costa Rica, and another 61 that lie dormant. But it's not just plants and animals that live here in Costa Rica. It has a population of 4.7 million, and 1.1 million of those are children just like you. Children who live here in Costa Rica can expect to spend at least 14 years in school, learning about many of the same things as you. After leaving school, lots of people work in agriculture, as it's one of the main sources of income. And here in Costa Rica, one fruit that provides many jobs for the local community is bananas. Each year, Costa Rica grows up to 2 million tons of bananas. That's 10 billion bananas a year.
Task 3.
Until he was 4 years old, James Henry Trotter had a happy life. He lived peacefully with his mother and father in a beautiful house beside the sea. There were always plenty of other children for him to play with, and there was the sandy beach for him to run about on and the ocean to paddle in. It was the perfect life for a small boy. Then, one day, James's mother and father went to London to do some shopping. And there, a terrible thing happened. Both of them suddenly got eaten up on a crowded street by an enormous, angry rhinoceros, which had escaped from the London Zoo. Now, this, as you can well imagine, was a rather nasty experience for two such gentle parents. But in the long run, it was far nastier for James than it was for them. They were dead and gone in 35 seconds flat. Poor James, on the other hand, was still very much alive. And all at once he found himself alone and frightened in a vast, unfriendly world. The lovely house by the seaside had to be sold immediately, and the little boy, carrying nothing but a small suitcase containing a pair of pyjamas and a toothbrush, was sent away to live with his two aunts. Their names were Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker. And I'm sorry to say that they were both really horrible people. They were selfish and lazy and cruel. And right from the beginning, they started beating poor James for almost no reason at all. They never called him by his real name, but always referred to him as, "You disgusting little beast," or, "You miserable creature." And they certainly never gave him any toys to play with or any picture books to look at. His room was as bare as a prison cell. They lived, Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker, and now James as well, in a queer ramshackle house on the top of a high hill in the south of England. The hill was so high that from almost anywhere in the garden, James could look down and see for miles and miles across a marvellous landscape of woods and fields. And on a very clear day, if he looked in the right direction, he could see a tiny grey dot far away on the horizon, which was the house that he used to live in with his beloved mother and father. But James was never allowed to go down off the top of that hill. Neither Aunt Sponge nor Aunt Spiker could ever be bothered to take him out herself, not even for a small walk or a picnic, and he certainly wasn't permitted to go alone. Until he was 4 years old, James Henry Trotter had a happy life. He lived peacefully with his mother and father in a beautiful house beside the sea. There were always plenty of other children for him to play with, and there was the sandy beach for him to run about on and the ocean to paddle in. It was the perfect life for a small boy. Then, one day, James's mother and father went to London to do some shopping. And there, a terrible thing happened. Both of them suddenly got eaten up on a crowded street by an enormous, angry rhinoceros, which had escaped from the London Zoo. Now, this, as you can well imagine, was a rather nasty experience for two such gentle parents. But in the long run, it was far nastier for James than it was for them. They were dead and gone in 35 seconds flat. Poor James, on the other hand, was still very much alive. And all at once he found himself alone and frightened in a vast, unfriendly world. The lovely house by the seaside had to be sold immediately, and the little boy, carrying nothing but a small suitcase containing a pair of pyjamas and a toothbrush, was sent away to live with his two aunts. Their names were Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker, and I'm sorry to say that they were both really horrible people. They were selfish and lazy and cruel, and right from the beginning they started beating poor James for almost no reason at all. They never called him by his real name, but always referred to him as "You disgusting little beast," or "You miserable creature." And they certainly never gave him any toys to play with or any picture books to look at. His room was as bare as a prison cell. They lived, Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker, and now James as well, in a queer ramshackle house on the top of a high hill in the south of England. The hill was so high that from almost anywhere in the garden, James could look down and see for miles and miles across a marvellous landscape of woods and fields. And on a very clear day, if he looked in the right direction, he could see a tiny grey dot far away on the horizon, which was the house that he used to live in with his beloved mother and father. But James was never allowed to go down off the top of that hill. Neither Aunt Sponge nor Aunt Spiker could ever be bothered to take him out herself, not even for a small walk or a picnic, and he certainly wasn't permitted to go alone.
Fin de la prueba.